that have on this journey of learning lead us to the higher path. That's the meaning of this chant. Om Sahana Bhavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahaviryam Karavavahai, Tejasvinavadhitamastu Mavitpishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. So Dr. Ajaya Joshi, he's originally from Massachusetts. He specializes in spinal disorders. Dr. Joshi graduated from Harvard School of Medicine and completed his orthopedic training in Harvard Combined Orthopedic Residency Program. He then completed a comprehensive fellowship in spinal surgery at Baylor College of Medicine. Dr. Joshi's special clinical interests include cervical spine care, pediatric and adult spinal deformity, and minimally invasive lumbar and cervical spinal technologies, as well as use of regenerative medicine strategies in healing orthopedic and spinal injuries. Dr. Joshi is board certified by the American Board of Orthopedic Surgery and is available to see patients at Stone Oak location. He's also board certified in American Board of Lifestyle and Medicine, and he practices that at Hill Country Lifestyle Medicine Clinic as well. Personally, I have known Ajaya for the last 13 years. He's an excellent physician, a dear friend, and human being with a big heart to serve the community, always willing to support all of our projects and other projects in the community as well. And he's been supporting I Do Yoga since its inception. So we are really thrilled to have him here. And he's been practicing yoga for the past couple of years that I know, and is taking really keen interest in this and trying to use this modality of healing in his practice to his patients also. And just wanted to acknowledge his mother-in-law's presence from Dallas. She's connected. I'm sure she has been an inspiration behind him taking interest in yoga. So I want to acknowledge Mrs. Sudha Ghate. And Ajaya lives in San Antonio, and he lives with his wife Anjali and two kids, Om and Seva. So thank you, Ajaya, for giving your time and energy. And it's all yours now.
Namaste. It's an honor to join you today. Really is a privilege. I have watched this grow from its infancy 6 years ago. And what a wonderful week it has been. I've been watching all of these and really just am moved by the passion of the organizing team for this wonderful topic. My affiliations are shown on this slide. My only disclosure related to this event is that I'm an event sponsor. I happen to be the only medical doctor amongst the speakers this week, so my content may sound different as it reflects me trying to reconcile my Western medical education in the late 90s with yoga. And that includes the medical school portion and traditional musculoskeletal training from 1997 to 2004. Many insights help me to reconcile these two things. Otherwise, you have two philosophies and there's cognitive dissonance, which can be disturbing and traumatic. So fortunately, they reconcile beautifully. And I'm thrilled to be able to talk to you about that. You see a little bit more in detail my healthcare journey. So medical school followed by orthopedic surgery residency and then spinal fellowship. Spinal care is what I focus on exclusively in my practice. And then more recent training is shown at that second bullet point, which is American College of Lifestyle Medicine, American Board of Lifestyle Medicine, preparation, stress management and resiliency training, and complete health improvement program. I'll summarize that these are essentially emphasizing that lifestyle and self-care are paramount for good health, with enormous individual, social, economic, and societal implications. So there's nothing more yogic than that. So first of all, I'll say that spinal health is informed by every aspect of yoga. My consistent observation with patients that I see in my practice is that the vast majority don't need surgery. So they're coming into a surgical practice. That doesn't mean that many people need surgery. And the vast majority who don't need surgery fall through the cracks regarding content. They need to hear about the things you see listed: weight reduction, core strength, sleep, diet, exercise, mindfulness, stress management, mind-body principles, and a fragmented fee-for-service medical system does not incentivize delivering this information. In a silo model of care, you have subspecialists who focus on a narrow toolbox, and the incentives tie that toolbox to revenue or relative value units and specific ancillaries. So where can someone hear or be able to hear about the mind and body as an integrated whole and taking care of them as such? So we will cover yoga for spinal health, but with a very integrated view. You can see the bird's eye view on the right side of the screen. Stated differently, we will cover a holistic view of health, both spinal health and overall health. Again, most current tools involve managing disease. It means responding to problems and offering external solutions, be it pills, treatments like surgeries, or other procedures. These approaches neither see an integrated whole person nor unlock our vast potential for self-care. And in short, they're ineffective, as reflected in our poor performance nationally in measurements of health and longevity. And this is the burden of what Satbir Khalsa on Sunday alluded to as non-communicable diseases: heart, lung, obesity, diabetic, and other chronic conditions and their downstream complications. That's why we have to embrace integrated systems of thinking and living like yoga. So I could not agree more with his points on a societal and policy level. Yoga, as we know, is so much more than that. It's not patches, it's not disease management. It's the science of right living. Embrace it to the extent that you can, and always reach for the principle that it is so much more than the asanas. As Gary Craftsow talked about on Tuesday, it's a multidimensional tool for knowing yourself. Allow yourself a little latitude regarding your behaviors and what is yogic. There's variations, to be sure. Like Susan, our guest and speaker yesterday, shared about how we're all composed of slightly different mixtures of the basic elements, and our dosha profiles are unique. Similarly, how you meditate or achieve mindfulness can vary and suit your unique experience. In our house, for example, focusing on loving our furry friend and family member can be entirely meditative and peaceful and yogic. So the invitation to give this talk was wonderful. The challenge is to avoid the reductionist view. And what that means is, let's disassemble yoga to find the parts that contribute to spinal health. It's not that easy. We'll cover the poses shortly in a couple of slides, but there are other important lifestyle and behavior principles. Remember that people find fulfillment in various types of physical activities, for example, shown in these pictures at the bottom of the slide. General physical goals are balanced muscle strength and flexibility across joints, So antagonistic muscles should be similarly strong and flexible. Overall body flexibility and balance, strength and endurance, various categories of fitness. And the yogasanas in general offer comprehensive physical and other benefits paralleling those found in other physical fitness routines. Self-reliance is a key. You have to own your own health and be accountable. The gene editing of the near future will not allow us or excuse us and in effect, let us say, hey, I'm going to edit out back pain or discontent or impatience. Not going to happen. So like, again, Satbir Khalsa pointed out on Sunday, yoga is a comprehensive toolbox that encompasses self-care and with it disease reversal. He mentioned that he is active at an integrative medicine consortium. So I think Maggie Gruskin and I have to work on getting him involved at ACLM, which is a wonderful platform as well, American College of Lifestyle Medicine. And ACLM espouses 6 foundational pillars of health. You can see them in those 5 boxes on the bottom row, the red 5 boxes. And the 6th one even below is avoid risky substances, which is intuitive. But what is beautiful is that when you look at the yoga principles of ahara, achar, vihar, and vichar, you see how closely they map to those lifestyle as medicine principles. So this is one unified message. And again, yoga for spinal health needs to cover all of these areas as a holistic solution. Not to belabor it, but yoga is health. It's not a patch. Yoga and Ayurveda, which we heard a lot about yesterday, give a comprehensive roadmap for wellness. We will look at specific spinal problems and the asanas that can help with specific disorders, but there are also larger self-care messages to promote spinal health. And the talk, Yoga for Spinal Problems and Yoga for Spinal Health, are really 2 different talks. This is intended to be for health, but we'll touch on how to manage specific problems. For many people, we should recognize and allow that given context, culture, and other factors, it may be CHIP, SMART, or ACLM tools that resonate. However, these are very yogic, and it's whatever variable works for you. So we transition into some spinal specifics now. You see here spinal anatomy. The spine is seen from the back, and the cervical spine or neck is the yellow section, below which is the thoracic spine at the rib cage level, which is in green. The lumbar spine is in blue, and at the bottom is in purple the sacrum, which is actually the bottom of the spine, but also the keystone back of the pelvic ring. The thoracic spine is less mobile due to the ribs. So really we get more of our motion, not all, but more of our motion in the cervical spine and lumbar spine. With proper training, the thoracic spine can be both mobile and also still in terms of serving its protective function. The overall function of the spine is shown on the slide, anchoring our limbs, keeping us upright, and a conduit to house and protect the spinal cord. The spinal column is powered by muscles, and control of those muscles is both voluntary and subconscious through the nervous system. The core is the essential functional unit that you should be thinking of. And the spine is really just the corner of the room. So the whole room is interesting, not just what happens in the corner. I guess I should have put people in this picture and maybe edible things and pets and whatnot, but it's basically a room that's got a lot going on still, not just the spine in the corner. Load is important. And when we talk about overall lifestyle, load in the front of our body can be very stressful to the spine. So we need to promote and encourage lovingly that people work on through sensible dietary strategies and proper exercise, weight optimization to unload the spine. And it's often a multiplier effect. So 5 or 10 pounds of truncal weight loss can be 20 to 40 pounds of stress relief at the back. The core stabilizes our limbs so that we turn the steering wheel and not the other way around. The spine is supported by a strong core and our stride becomes efficient, whether we're doing an athletic activity or not. Core muscles are circumferential. They're deep inside like the psoas. They're at the surface like multifidus, and the large muscles that lay over like latissimus and gluteus. They include muscles that are leaving the core area to go down the legs or into the arms. So scapular stabilizers, for example, the muscles of the pelvic girdle. These are all part of the core. Common spinal conditions are shown here: strain, spondylosis, stenosis, kyphosis, and fractures. Strain is soft tissue. Spondylosis is just the fancier term for arthritis in the spine. Stenosis generically means narrowing of a tube. So you can have coronary artery stenosis or spinal stenosis with varying clinical pictures. Cervical stenosis can lead to cord compression, which can lead to balance issues, grasp issues, bowel and bladder dysfunction. Lumbar stenosis is happening lower down and not at the spinal cord level. So it has different symptoms typically, and sometimes no symptoms. So symptoms can be axial at the spine or radiating into a limb, or sometimes, again, there are no symptoms. Kyphosis is both being pitched forward when you use that term globally, like I see someone and they have kyphosis. That means they're not standing up straight. We'll see a picture of that shortly. But we have normal areas of kyphosis, like the thoracic spine is curved when you see it from the side with the convexity facing backwards. And that is by definition kyphosis. But when you have too much overall kyphosis, you're leaning forward and that can lead to balance changes, fall risk. Fractures can contribute to kyphosis. We ought to be monitoring bone density society-wide with certain triggers, like women as they get to menopause and beyond. It's a male and female problem in the senior population. We should emphasize low impact activities. There is some information suggesting, or strongly suggesting, that yoga can benefit bone mineral density. But any low impact activity will stimulate bones. Bones are an amazing tissue. Our bones like to make more of themselves in response to force. And we should also be mindful about calcium and vitamin D optimization in everyone. So you see the visuals here. Strain is soft tissue, that's on the left. Spondylosis is in the center with arthritic changes like bone spurs, narrowing of discs, which incidentally can contribute to and cause stenosis. And on the far right, you see a disc herniation pinching on that yellow nerve on the right side of the diagram, creating stenosis and maybe creating a radiating or radicular pain pattern. Stenosis is seen, again, where this disc herniation is occurring at the left-sided picture, which is a tunnel view. We're inside the spine looking at a disc pushing on that nerve on the right side of the diagram. We're looking at a side view at the center picture, and the disc has an arrow to it. It's in red, and it's pushing on a nerve. There can be varying clinical correlations from I have no symptoms, I had back pain, but now I'm better, or I have the most intense leg pain ever, I am miserable. Kyphosis, again, is being pitched forward if it's not referring to a normal spinal contour. So this gentleman, we would say, has kyphosis. If you draw a plumb line from the base of his neck, it should fall over his tailbone or sacrum. But in this case, it's forward of that. So he has kyphosis. He's not standing fully upright. And there's a lot of energy expenditure and fall risk and pain, possible pain consequences to that. Here are fractures that can have significant health consequences from contributing to more fractures, to pain, to other issues. L4 is the second bone above the sacrum. So here's sacrum, here's L5, here's L4, there's loss of height. Imagine that you stepped on a soda can and that crunched down, and that's how L4 became shorter. L5 has a fracture but hasn't really lost height. It just has a crack in it. So common spinal symptoms are shown here: pain, numbness, tingling, weakness, imbalance, and rarely bowel and bladder dysfunction. Unless a situation involves tumor or infection or spinal cord compression, structural instability like kyphosis or a fracture that's not going to do well left to its own devices, or neurologic instability like bowel or bladder issues or weakness, most of the time, conservative care helps significantly. And you see I'm referring to self-care, but also thoughtful support with medicines, physical therapy, yoga, bracing sometimes. Pain is a final common pathway. The body does not have a unique symptom for each spinal disorder. So we say, ouch, it's unclear sometimes if that means there's fracture, strain, arthritis flare. Sometimes pain does not have an anatomic correlate. Someone with the worst migraine in the world has bad pain, but they don't have a bleed or a tumor in their brain. And similarly, pain can be many things. It's real, it's common, and we need to approach it thoughtfully. And when there's not a structural basis, we should emphasize holistic self-care tools, including stress management. So here is strain, which is a soft tissue event at the muscle level, the ligaments. It's myofascial is another term. It's common. It's sometimes traumatic, but it often is postural, occupational risks, our behaviors, you know, laying in bed up against the headboard with an iPad or a phone, curled forward over our screen or our device or our notebook. You know, this leads to it can contribute to and lead to strain. The asanas that can help for strain symptoms are shown. In addition, consider taking breaks at work, avoiding prolonged sustained screen time, pranayama certainly, and other aspects of yogic living like stress management and hydration, just to name two. Here's a situation of spinal cord compression. And this may result in myelopathy or the dysfunction of the spinal cord. This is looking at someone from the left side. The spinal cord is exiting the brain here and is surrounded by plenty of white spinal fluid, both here and below as the cervical spine transitions to the thoracic spine. But in the mid-cervical spine, disc bulges and thickening of the back lining of the spinal canal are really pinching the spinal cord. It would not be surprising if this person was having clumsiness, numbness, gait changes, and this really needs medical care, typically surgery. Fortunately, less common. Cervical radiculopathy. Again, radiculopathy means nerve involvement. Radiating symptoms are common, and by definition, radiculopathy means radiating. You see the top diagram shows the C5, C6, C7, and C8 nerve roots. Those are four of the cervical levels, and different nerves map to different parts of our body. Treatments are shown: anti-inflammatories, other medicines, muscle relaxants, maybe a soft collar, traction in mild flexion. Flexion exercises, so flexion is a theme here. Maybe a taller pillow prompts gentle flexion at night. Maybe epidural steroid injections to help calm the irritation of the nerves. The asanas that can help both early and later are shown. Cervical spondylosis is next. So that is arthritis leading to flaring neck pain. You see the acute flare strategies, which is gentle traction, sometimes available, sometimes not. Medicines can help. Heat, Again, breathing, pranayama, can be very powerful. Relative rest and dietary emphases. And all I mean by that are sugars are inflammatory. We've had lobbies and advertising wars and campaigns over time where the fat is blamed and then this lobby and that lobby. So we know sugars are inflammatory and they can contribute to pain, and we should be reducing overall sugar load for multiple health reasons. Again, asanas that can help in an acute phase are shown. And then here's what to do in a maintenance phase of, I'd like my neck to be well, I'd like to not have flares of symptoms happen. These are the various asanas that can be very helpful. So neck summation, neck pain with or without arm pain is strain or spondylosis. Your body doesn't know the difference, but practically speaking, it doesn't matter. The treatment approaches are very similar. Pursue the asanas and the behaviors. If you don't have pain, build a practice to be well and minimize the risk of chronic pain. That's the maintenance or thriving phase. We turn to scoliosis next. Scoliosis is a curvature, not just a curvature, but a rotation of the spine as well. But when you look from the front view, the spine should be a straight line. So here's an X-ray. And instead of being straight, you see that the spine goes to our left on the screen at the thoracic level where the vertebrae that have ribs are. Often there are no symptoms early on. About 3% of people worldwide have scoliosis. And most of the time it's idiopathic, which means we don't know why. There's no underlying specific reason. There are various curve types. We name curves for where they occur. So we can have thoracolumbar curves, high thoracic curves, and so on. Double curves, single curves, triple curves. Traditional care has included watching, adding therapy when appropriate, bracing, which has been shown to be effective in a dose-related fashion, and surgery when needed. For some very specific reasons. Interesting information emerged several years ago. This is a study that has shown an effect, not the most stringent p-values and not a randomized prospective controlled trial or double-blinded or anything like that. So nevertheless, when young people, teenagers who are being braced for scoliosis either had side-lying plank as a specific exercise, as a yoga-derived asana introduced or not, the group that was practicing this had a lower rate of progression of their scoliosis and, in fact, some improvement. So this is very exciting to know. And these days, a mainstay of scoliosis care in my hands is encouraging or emphasizing physical activity, including these poses. But now we come to this dizzying list of causes of back pain. And the reason I put so many things on the list is that back pain is varied. It can reflect stress. Like I'm an 8-year-old who's being bullied at school, feels like there's stomach pain. As a way to get to stay home and not be bullied. So there's all kinds of things that are happening in people. We're all complex, but back pain can be from internal organs. It can be from true structural issues at the back. There are diverse causes, and many times it's not spinal pathology. So a general guiding principle is to optimize yogic variables of weight, core strength, sleep, hydration, dietary factors, stress management. And these are, in fact, the 6 principles of ACLM, the 6 pillars. So again, the overlap is beautiful. It's very harmonious in my mind. When you break down the etiologies or causes of back pain, common spinal causes, again, soft tissue strain, spondylosis, kyphosis, and fracture. Lumbar strain, again, a myofascial process acute phase strategies are shown, medicines, relative rest, pranayama, heat, maybe traction or inversion, and these asanas to start. At other times, in a maintenance mode of being healthy and to avoid further aggravation, these poses can be very helpful. And I want to mention, I know I'm putting a lot of references on these slides that may be of interest to access for those watching. And if you feel like it's helpful and you'd like to access it, these talks are all being recorded. But in addition, this actual PowerPoint is intended to be accessible. We'll explain at the end of the talk through a sharing of the cloud document. So that way you don't have to feel like you have to capture this each slide by slide. Sagittal balance changes our uprightness. This can change over time, hopefully not because of a fracture. So here you see a sequence of a woman aging and her spine is getting more kyphotic. Is it because there's a fracture? So if you look at this MRI, the second image from the left, you see that this bone has whiteness in it. By the way, that's the spinal cord, that dark stripe with white spinal fluid around it. All these vertebrae are square and healthy, but there's a wedge-shaped fracture here that is making the thoracic spine more kyphotic than it would be normally. So hopefully that's not the reason that kyphosis happens. That should be treated, of course. Hopefully we have other correctable processes that we can look at. So aside from fractures, discs can wear. Discs are materials like the tires on our vehicles, and tires have a limited tread life. And similarly, discs are being loaded every day. Now, can we make some healthy decisions? Yes. We know that smoking impairs the blood flow and the nutrition to those discs. So for that and many other reasons, obviously we shouldn't be smoking. We know that if we can avoid overloading those discs, that we can do better. Avoiding vibrational activity. So it's an occupational hazard for someone driving a bus, but hopefully we can do behaviors that promote health of discs not wearing out. The wearing out phenomenon is reflected here in the third image from the left. And this is a stack of course, Oreo cookies. So if you take the cream filling out of these Oreo cookies, the stack gets shorter. And when the stack gets shorter, that's meant to simulate how you might see not the normal contour. So if we look at the X-ray on the far right, you can see the sacrum here at the bottom. It's this sort of triangular shape on the side view of this entire thoracic and lumbar spine seen from the right side. And in the lumbar spine, it's really bone on bone on bone on bone, and there's less lordosis, which is the opposite of kyphosis, where your convexity is facing the front, and the front is to our right as we're viewing this. So when you have less lordosis, you're like the stack of Oreo cookies that doesn't have the cream filling cushions or the healthy discs. And you might feel like, I can't stand up straight because I still have my thoracic kyphosis. I don't have enough lordosis. That could be a challenge. So it's intriguing to me that if we do regular extension-based exercises, could greater flexibility and muscle activation from years of those asanas counter a loss of lumbar lordosis or sway back? And so it's hard to study this, but perhaps very exciting, yoga could be preventive and a treatment for kyphosis, both preventive and a treatment. There's so many other variables that happen, and these are slow changes over decades. But if we're already kyphotic or wherever we are in the aging process, extension-based exercises could hopefully get us in a more readily into a position countering kyphosis, which has benefits of decreasing fall risk and increasing balance. So that is a ringing endorsement for doing lots of bhujangasana. Okay, lumbar spondylosis. Treatment for acute symptoms is very similar to strain. Again, your body doesn't know if it's strain or spondylosis. It just knows, ouch. So you think about the acute phase, and then you think about the maintenance or thriving phase. That's hopefully a theme that you see. Medicines, stretching, asanas, and the rest of the yogic lifestyle strategies. You see the acute phase poses, and you see the maintenance phase here on this next slide. Lumbar stenosis and radiculopathy. Flexion exercises help open the spinal canal. We have studied MRIs of people bending forward and people extending backwards. And the spinal canal narrows because of the buckling of its lining when we extend. So exercises that help open the spinal canal are more flexion-based exercises or poses. And you see the asanas here that could be helpful. In this case, we would have a ringing endorsement, so to speak, to de-emphasize Bhujang Asana and others that are going into extension. So my routine, I'll just allude to, and Hetalji mentioned it in the beginning, it's been a lot of reflection and commitment, even more than before, to good health, as I had time to think last year. And so for maintenance, for flexibility, for a lot of different reasons, my routine has evolved. Again, I'm privileged to sit in with my daughter and my mother-in-law, who have a very wonderful routine that they do on Zoom together. Pranayam, kriyas, also asana sequences. I also do other things like running, biking, swimming. Variety is good. You find your mix that appeals to you, and that's a very healthy approach. Just like there's a variety of asanas that we can emphasize for various objectives within yoga asana. Start where you are and find your preferred mix. That brings us to the conclusion. I hope there's lots of time left for dialogue and questions. I do want to acknowledge the hard work and wonderful efforts of the entire I Do Yoga SA team. Three references that were very helpful are shown here, and the visual is on the right side. Yoga for back and spine, yoga for back and joint disorders, yoga management of common diseases, both musculoskeletal and other, and back care basics. As a reminder, this is an educational talk. It's not medical advice. I'm reachable. I'm part of the San Antonio community and beyond. And these two links are obviously on this slide, and they're also, I think, in the chat box. Very good reads about the four pillars of healthy living in the yoga philosophy in terms of ahar, achar, vihar, and vichar. And then the second link is an interesting commentary on multifidus, one of the important muscles in the back. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Ajaya Joshi. That was really very informative, and I'm sure there's tons of questions. I will see if there's already any in chat box, and then if not, we can have people put their questions in the chat box, or you feel free to unmute and ask the questions directly. So I don't see any questions so far.
Hello, thank you. It's an amazing presentation. Very grateful to you. Just a point of detail, please. I'm trying to copy the article that you're, the link that you're sending, but it's not allowing me to copy it. Like usually, you know, you could highlight it and you put copy and paste, but this is not allowing me to do that. I don't know if it's my computer or because you're doing it through Facebook or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, Helen. Sometimes Zoom will not allow you to copy from the chat window. Sometimes I have seen that issue. No worries. You can just drop your email here. I will email you all those links.
Oh, great. Thank you. That's super. Thank you very much. It's amazing.
And anyway, after the end of all those six talk series, we are going to send email to all those who have registered through the Eventbrite, because we have email addresses, their email addresses only. So we'll send the recordings links as well as the any presentation shared by the speakers.
That's great. Thank you. Okay, I'll give you my email.
Okay.
So there is a question about sciatica. Can you please talk about sciatica?
Yes, of course. Sciatica means different things to different people. I think a common working sense of that is that it's a radiating pain down the leg. Whether it's truly due to a disc herniation or not, often it is due to a disc herniation. Other reasons to have a pain down the leg are piriformis area compression of the sciatic nerve. The piriformis is one of our rotators of the hip. So literally pointing your foot inwards or pointing your foot outwards is rotating your whole limb. And the piriformis is part of that rotation. The sciatic nerve can be bothered there. So sciatica, I want to make sure that I'm not missing the target here, but sciatica has a couple of different common causes. Can be intermittent. It can respond to medications, time, sometimes injections. And there are several ways to stretch tissues, such as the pelvic girdle muscles, that could be helpful in reducing symptoms. I got one message which was shared perhaps one-on-one that said, can you speak to spinal degeneration if we just go in order on the chat box? And so spinal degeneration is just a generic notion of, you know, parts wear out. It's why people have arthritic hips and knees. I don't want us to think it's just fated to be, though. There's a lot of different variables, again, in these different categories that can reduce the chance of degeneration or degeneration that bothers us. So there's the degeneration you see on an X-ray. And the studies say that if you look at a group of people in their 50s, 60s, 70s, or 80s age-wise, by decade, you'll see more changes of degeneration as people get older. But interestingly, that doesn't mean that they're bothered. So degeneration tends to happen. We have these levers of self-care, the diet and the, you know, physical activity, connectedness, some health habits like avoid risky substances, that sixth box, so don't smoke, et cetera, that can reduce the chance of degeneration. That's probably the best way to sum up that complex topic.
Hi, mister. This is Mr. Ali. I'm a retired military. I got my L5-S1 fused. And I do most of the exercise you have shown up here, but that nighttime is horrible trying to sleep. Is there any kind of particular way you can sleep which would help?
I tell people be on a firm surface, whether it's a coil mattress or a foam mattress, be on a firm surface. Sleeping on one side or on the back is an excellent way to start. There is more loading of the spine when we lay face down, as we have studied. We can't control where we end up when we're asleep, but those are the sleep basics that I endorse.
But it's still, I mean, with the sleep apnea and all that stuff I've got with the war injury, it's very, very hard for me with PTSD also to get some a decent night's sleep with the pain.
Understood. That can be challenging. And the formula, we would have to dissect that a little bit more in detail. I'd have to think about it a little bit more in a different venue.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. There's a question here. Is it okay to just pick what's coming up on the chat box, because there's a lot of content? So can osteoporosis be reversed is a great question. And I'm passionate about this topic. And I'll tell you a little bit about my journey in that area. These broken bones, like stepping on a soda can, causing a lot of pain. Sometimes they cause no pain. You look at an x-ray and you see that a fracture happened and you ask someone, did you ever hurt a lot? And they say no. So, but sometimes they're miserable and they lead to hospitalization. So I've seen many, many people over the years, either as an inpatient consult in a hospital or coming to my office, and they have a fracture. And I would cement the fracture when we thought that was appropriate. And that would lead to pain relief typically, but a subset of those people would have another fracture. When you have a fracture, now you're at a 5 times higher risk of having the next fracture. So this led to this interest in what are we doing? Well, we're treating these events, but we're missing this underlying disease process of osteoporosis. So that led to an interest, and our group has really come together. We are quote unquote surgical, which means we do surgery, but we're looking for every opportunity to help people without surgery. And our bone wellness program says that you could be an 80-year-old man or a 50-year-old perimenopausal woman or anyone of any type who has a risk profile. And what do we do with that risk profile? So there's education about diet, about activity. But when someone has osteoporosis, yes, there are medicine answers, there's nutritional answers, there are exercise answers, and there's some very effective regimens. A bone density and a FRAX score are the mainstays of assessing bone health, in addition to some labs. And a bone density that's low, like less than -2.5 as a T-score, can be changed over time with some treatments. And they're pharmacologic treatments that we depend on. And these medicines are meant to build bone, and they do that very effectively. It's very rewarding when that happens, because now you've taken that person to a safe and healthy zone of function where they're not, you know, about to break a bone, which can be a life-altering event and certainly lead to early mortality and demise. So that's definitely an area of passionate interest of mine.
Hi, Dr. Doshi, this is Padmaja. I'm from Virginia. Actually, my husband had a spinal cord C1, C2 fusion, and he had already 80% compression. The spinal cord is narrowed down. And he had a C1, C2 fusion surgery on Johns Hopkins in 2014. Since from there, and he doesn't have any issues, but recently we found his stool sensation got lost. We are in dilemma. Still, we are in a process of checking with the doctors, and we did MRIs and everything. Like a spinal cord is completely good. There is no, everything is good, but especially nowadays, he's feeling having this issue is that he lost the stool sensation. So is it because of the spinal cord narrow down after 7 years suddenly happened like this? We still not diagnosed, like what is the root cause? Is that because of the spine compression or he's losing some nervous, strength also,
So first, I'm sorry that he and you collectively have gone through that. That sounds very challenging. And I'll tell you that there's information, including looking at studies that help us answer those questions well. So I'm not trying to evade certain questions. It's just hard when they're very patient-specific questions. What I'll tell you is that spinal cord compression over time can lead to atrophy of the spinal cord, much like if you put a kid with a broken bone in a cast for 4 months to heal that arm bone. When you take the cast off, the muscles are atrophied with disuse. So a spinal cord can be decompressed, but still have gone through enough injury that it does not function normally, or later on, late scarring can change function even well after there's no more pressure on it. And that's probably the best I could do from a distance commenting on a medical situation.
Sorry, we did MRI recently. There is no pressure on spinal, but whatever it is, 2014, the same thing is there. But right now he's having the issues. He lost the stool sensation. The root cause is still not at, find out what is the root cause of that. Yeah, my second question is there any research is going on to regenerate the spinal cord like already compression 80%? Is there any research? Like I heard something like stem cells. So, but I don't know, like, you know, if it's there yet or not.
Stem cells are a tricky and challenging and controversial area. And I'll tell you a brief answer is that in the engineering world, they talk about the signal to noise ratio. There's a lot of noise out there with stem cells. So it's a great question. And I don't, frankly, just my acknowledgement is I don't have an up-to-date understanding of spinal cord injury treatment research, because that's not what I typically see in my practice. It's a community practice. It's not an academic center. It's not a trauma-based practice. So we don't see a lot of spinal cord injury patients. So I don't know the answer to that. I can look. I invite you to, you know, to look at pubmed.gov, G-O-V, and I could try to look and share some information with the organizers, but I don't know at this moment.
Yeah, can you spell that website again, sorry?
Pubmed.gov is a search engine for all medical journals, essentially.
And my last question, sorry about that. Is there any asanas you recommend for the, stool sensation he lost? Right now he's having the breathing techniques, which is helping a little bit, but he's not able to do the asanas, like a proper asanas. So you recommend any asanas for that?
I don't have specific recommendations. I know that there's a pool of, a group of people here with some immense levels of expertise and experience. But this is a very specific scenario. So while I am a spinal care provider and specialist, this is a area of yoga for spinal cord injury or dysfunction that lays outside of my experience. So I invite, if there's someone else that can comment, that's great. Otherwise, I apologize that I'm not sure how to answer that.
Thank you, Dr. Joshi.
We can continue down the chat box. I want to make sure I didn't miss one. Tips. So going back up is yoga or tips for carpal tunnel. I think the interesting part is of this at this stage is illustrating how much you can learn and yet how much you may still not know. So I will defer potentially to my esteemed colleagues who may or may not know. I don't know if there's specifics as far as carpal tunnel strategies with various poses or mudras. I'm not sure.
Yes, with hastabandhas and several alignment cues during several asanas, it does help, but I don't have specific studies to quote, but yes, with certain alignment cues, the asanas can help carpal tunnel.
The next question is, can a person with severe spondylitis start practicing yoga? And the answer is absolutely yes, a resounding yes. Again, I have not worn a teacher's hat, but there are experienced teachers in this group who can comment on people that might have come to them, seniors or middle-aged adults who have had bad spinal symptoms and maybe deformity, who have started off maybe in a chair or getting on the mat, and little by little, the body is ready to respond. So you start where you are, and people can safely and effectively start practicing yoga. And I don't want to sound like the expert as a teacher, but that's what I have heard from Hetalji and others.
Hello, Ajaya.
Yes.
It's Nidia Darby.
Hello.
I loved your presentation. Thank you so much. Yes. There's so much to be done. I'm a doctor of physical therapy and a therapeutic yoga specialist, and much to be done. Individuals at any state, you don't have to move greatly. You start with your breath. You find a comfortable position. Yoga practices involving pranayama, you know, the asana is the movement, mindfulness and awareness in the breath. It's really, really beneficial. So start small, start slow, and it can be really important to helping you move towards a more spinal mobility. The breath, like Ajaya was saying, moves the rib cage, moves the thoracic spine. So anyway, yes, do the work. Thank you so much for this work. Thank you.
Thank you, Nidhi.
I want to just, I didn't realize, I compared notes with Nidhi and thought that she was going to be tied up in another commitment and presentation that she herself was doing. I just want to acknowledge that she's been foundational in my yoga journey as a teacher. So Nidhi Darby, thank you.
It's been a pleasure. I love what you're doing, sir. Thank you.
Help me if I'm missing any questions working down.
In my lower back, it's a whole feast going on in there, and severe pain and shoulder pain too. So yeah, I think these are so specific questions, but there's a question about lower back pain and severe pain in shoulder.
So this is a perfect opportunity to say, it's pain, ouch, what's going on? Before embarking on a specific plan, like let's do these asanas, let's, you know, pursue dietary changes, you know, the circumstances are important. Is this someone who's 80 or someone who's 20? Is it someone who has been, you know, lifting weights, or is it someone who has, you know, felt a crack, a pop in their back, and they're in debilitating pain? Does it come and go activity related? There's just a lot to find out that perhaps a medical evaluation sets the stage for, hey, this is not some of the structural things. Neurologically, we're okay. I have pain. Okay, pain is a challenging entity sometimes. There's multimodal approaches between the breath, asanas, medicines, sometimes injections. So you have a hybrid mixture of strategies here, which can be most effective. So severe pain, we acknowledge it. Sorry that, you know, for those who go through that, I think a systematic way to go to a trusted provider to be seen and to come up with a plan is always what's sensible and logical.
I think we'll take one last question, Ajaya, then we can finish it. Is there any special recommendations for a kind of bed for back pain, chronic low back pain from degenerative spinal disease?
I would endorse a firm surface. Again, type of mattress doesn't matter, coil or foam, but a firm surface. And again, starting off on one's back or sides is fine. Hard to control how we end up.
Just one final question. What are your thoughts on a stimulator, TENS unit put in a lower back?
I think a TENS unit can be very helpful in the context of managing back pain.
So it does not affect if you're doing any of the yoga positions?
Well, people use TENS units intermittently, so not constantly. So it may be that it is removed in the middle of a yoga practice or for the practice and then put back on at another time of day. But there is definitely a role for TENS units in helping.
But this is the one that's installed inside your back.
Inserted inside his back.
So that is the term for that is a spinal cord stimulator. And yes, that is a technology that's, you know, we could talk about it like a pacemaker for your spine. Pacemakers have to do with the rhythm of the heart. So it's not exactly an analogy, but this is a device that goes into the epidural space for those who recall, you know, an epidural catheter, for example, for labor, the space in the spinal canal outside the water balloon that holds the nerves, but inside the bony tunnel. And really it's a fascinating distraction of the pain pathways. So if we send an electrical signal that blocks the pain pathways from transmitting a pain signal to the brain, we have effectively helped manage pain. So these are implanted devices living entirely inside someone, and they can be incredibly effective. So if the question is, can you do yoga with a spinal cord stimulator? The answer is absolutely yes. There's no reason that should prevent someone from doing yoga.
So it will reduce some of your medicine, what you take. for your back?
Well, if a yoga program is going to work, then that's one way to measure how it works, is that it leads to needing less medicine. So that's definitely possible.
Thank you.
Okay. So thank you, Ajay, for that patience in answering all those questions. We'll move on, and I'll now invite Sherry to make some announcement.
Thank you. Thank you so much for a wonderful presentation. We are so excited to have you all here this evening, as well as I hope you will join us either virtually or in person this Saturday, the 19th of June, at the River Center Mall in the Lagoon area on the historic banks of our Riverwalk. We're going to have a wonderful community class led by three local teachers, Melissa Agiti, Carlos Gomez, and Jody Whitting. So I hope you can join us at 7 p.m. this Saturday. And then at the end of the class, we'll be throwing colors, which is so much fun. And next, I'm going to introduce Kristen McKinney-Baggett, who is the executive director of a local wonderful nonprofit called Yoga Day. Kristen?
Thank you, Sherry. Yes, Yoga Day is here in San Antonio. And let me see if I can share my screen. I actually put a slide together. We're here in San Antonio, and we do yoga with children and families, and basically anyone who needs it. I'm very proud that we've never said no to anyone because of finances. And much of what we do is helped by people who support the International Day of Yoga. These pictures right here, these are all examples of some of the classes that we do in our community for free. The bottom right-hand corner is down off South Flores, Briscoe Elementary. Up above is Walsham Elementary. Over to the side was over on the east side. I'm trying to remember, that was Douglas Elementary. And then down below, those were our community classes. And so thank you so much to International Day of Yoga for always supporting us every year. And for those of you that contribute to International Day of Yoga, those contributions help to support Yoga Day as well. So thank you so much.